जयो राधो माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरवनचारी यमुना तीरवनचारी जयो राधो माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधो माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरवनचारी यमुना तीरवनचारी जयो राधो माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधो माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य स्तुत्र सुतु श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्री एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय निताय गौ प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय आ गवेश दिया संबल दिवती आगवेश श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग धर्म प्रोजित कैतवोत्र परमो नियमत्सुरानां सुतां बीजं वासवमत्र वस्तु शिवदं तापत्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमद्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा परैरीश्वर सद्यो हृदय वरुज्यते कृतिभिषु शुशुभिष्टक्षणात् ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, The Marriage of Karma and Devahuti, text number 13. Word meanings, yaha, hu, udyatam, an offering, anadritya, rejecting, kinasham, from a miser, abhi yachate, begs, kshiyate, is lost, tat, his, yashaha, reputation, spitam, widespread, manaha, honor, cha, and avagyaya, by neglectful behavior, hataha, destroyed. Yojyatam anadritya kinasham abhyachate kshiyate tajashaspitam manaschavagnaya hataha yojyatam anadritya kinasham abhiyachate kshiyate tadyashasphitam manaschavagnaya hataha. Translation, one who rejects an offering that comes of its own accord, but later begs a boon from a miser, thus loses his widespread reputation, and his pride is humbled by the neglectful behavior of others. Srila Prabhupada's purport. So this is Swayambhuva Manu speaking here. The general procedure of Vedic marriage is that a father offers his daughter to a suitable boy. That is a very respectable marriage. A boy should not go to the girl's father and ask for the hand of his daughter in marriage. That is considered to be humbling one's respectable position. Swayambhuva Manu wanted to convince Karma Muni, since he knew that the sage wanted to marry a suitable girl. I am offering just such a suitable wife. Do not reject the offer, or else, because you are in need of a wife, you will have to ask for such a wife from someone else who may not behave with you so well. In that case, your position will be humbled. Another feature of this incident is that Swayambhuva Manu was the emperor. But he went to offer his qualified daughter to a poor Brahmana. Gardama Muni had no worldly possessions. He was a hermit living in the forest, but he was advanced in culture. Therefore, in offering one's daughter to a person, the culture and quality are counted as prominent, not wealth or any other material consideration. Om Gyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So these kinds of discussions are have to do with social things, tend to. There's a lot of that kind of thing in the Bhagavatam. This is a verse from the 12th canto, chapter 3, text 14. So 12th canto, of course, we're getting towards the very end, sort of the epilogue of the Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami said, O mighty Parikshit, I have related to you the narrations of all these great kings who spread their fame throughout the world and then departed. My real purpose was to teach transcendental knowledge and renunciation. Stories of kings lend power and opulence to these narrations, but do not in themselves constitute the ultimate aspect of knowledge. So the Bhagavatam is full of stories of kings, and a lot of it has to do with their marriages, actually, because, well, of course, Swayambhuva Manu, he's a kind of king. He's an emperor, Manu, sometimes called. Because the Bhagavatam is about kings, actually. That's the structure of it. Gopi Pranadan Prabhu used to say, we're hearing about kings because kings have more exciting lives than sages. And not a lot to say about. There's a lot of, when you talk about kings, you get, actually, I was thinking of it, it's kind of funny, but the Bhagavatam is full of sex and violence. There's really a lot of it in the Bhagavatam. Because we're talking about kings and that kind of thing goes on in their lives. So I thought I would say something about some. Now here we're going to hear about a couple and how they acted. So there are a lot of couples discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam as we go through it, when we hear about these different genealogies. The son of so-and-so is so-and-so, and he married so-and-so, and they had this child, and so on. There's a lot of that kind of thing. In fact, I was looking through, especially in the ninth canto, there's really a lot. I was thinking, it's so amazing because, of course, Shukadeva Goswami is speaking this, and he has heard it, and he's remembered it all. All of these lines, I don't know how many names there are. I don't know if anyone's ever done a compilation, you know, counted them up, but there's hundreds of names of persons in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Shukadeva Goswami knew all these. The way you see it acts a lot, the way it comes a lot of times is it'll say, so this person had 10 sons, then it'll start going through. So this son had this, you know, then his son was so-and-so, then his son was so-and-so, and then his son was so-and-so. And then maybe he'll go three or four deep, and then he'll go on to the other one and maybe skip some of them. It seems like really arbitrary the way that genealogies come down. But of course, a lot of times what happens is that it's leading up to an avatar of the Lord. In the context of describing these different lineages, we hear about some avatars appearing or some very famous pastime like the churning of the milk ocean or something like that. Especially in a context of the different manus, in the beginning of the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami asks about, he says, you've done a lot of talking about Swayambhuva Manu and his descendants. Can you tell me about the other Manus? So when he talks about, so then he goes through one after the other, the 14 Manus in a day of Brahma, and he explains something about each of them, a kind of a summary form. You know, each of the Manus has certain personalities that change along with them. One of them is King Indra, for example, the king of the heavenly planets. There's a different Indra in every Manvantar. So those are delineated in the Bhagavatam. It says that the Manus were so, the Indra was so-and-so. And then it'll say something about the demigods, and it gives a name of some category of demigods. They were the demigods during this Manvantar, and so on. So the eighth canto goes through a lot of these different, in fact, the different leelas that come up are coming in the context of him, of Shukadeva Goswami explaining about this manvantara, that manvantara. For example, so then during the Chakshusha manvantara, the manvantara avatar was so-and-so, so then he'll tell the story of, you know, some particular story leading up to that. So at the end of the eighth canto, we have the last chapter of the eighth canto is about the Matsya avatar. And this happened in the Chakshusha Manvantara, it's Matsya, happened during the Chakshusha millennium. So the Chakshusha millennium comes just before the Vaivasvata millennium, which we're in now. So it just happens that the personality, the sage who had interaction, who was a devotee of Lord Matsya, his name was Satyavrata, of course, Satyavrata Muni. And he, in the next Manvantara, Vaivasvata Manvantara, he becomes the son of the sun god, Vaivasvata Manu. He becomes Vaivasvata Manu, who's the son of the sun god, of course. Vaivasvata means the son of Vivaswan. So Vivaswan is his lineage. Actually, it's interesting because at the beginning of there are a couple of sections. I think the first chapter of the ninth canto, and then later in the 14th, the sun dynasty is described. When at the beginning of the ninth canto, Shukadeva Goswami actually asks, he says, can you tell me about Vaivasvata Manu, the current Manu that we're in? Can you explain about it? So it's interesting the way that Parikshit Maharaj asked Shukadeva. So the way Parikshit Maharaj starts laying it out, he says, so in the beginning, only the Supreme Lord existed as the Mahapurusha. And then from him, Lord Brahma was born from a golden lotus flower. So he starts tracing all the way back. So the way he traces it is Lord Brahma, then he said Brahma appeared, of course. And then his son was Marichi. Then his son was Kasyapa. And in the union of Kasyapa and Aditi, then we get Vivaswan, the sun god. And then Vivaswan's son was Vaivasvata Manu, or his name is also Shradadev. So we hear, so that's the context, that's how it begins the whole discussion about Vaivasvata Manu and his sons. We hear there that Vaivasvata Manu, again, his name is Shradadev, and his wife is Shraddha. So we hear about how he had 10 sons. The first one we hear about Ikshvaku. So he was his first son. Actually, it wasn't his first son. So he had 10 sons. So after they're listed, these 10 sons are listed. Ikshvaku is the first one. One of them's name is Nriga. I was thinking, is this the same Nriga that we know about from Krishna's Leela? In the 10th canto, the lizard that was in the well, he was King Nriga. It's actually not the same Nriga, but Ikshvaku, was it Ikshvaku? Or another one of the brothers of these 10 had a son named Nriga, and that's that Nriga. Yes, Ikshvaku, actually. Ikshvaku is the father of the Nriga. So of these 10 sons of Vaivasvata Manu, one of them was Ikshvaku, and his son was Nriga, but he also had a brother named Nriga. So in any case, after these 10 sons are listed, their names are given, then Shukadeva Goswami explains that first he didn't have any sons. And he was worried about that because, of course, he's a great ruler, a king, he has to have a son. So he approached his guru, Vasishta, and asked him if he could conduct a sacrifice so that he could have a son. So Vasishta was more or less the organizer of it, and he had priests working under him. And the priest who was, there was a head priest, and then there was another subordinate priest who was actually offering the oblations into the fire so that he could get a son. But what happened was Shraddha, the wife, she said, the king wanted a son, but she wanted a daughter. So she asked the priest, can you arrange that I get a daughter? So this is what happened, actually. The fire sacrifice was conducted, and she got pregnant. And the king was expecting a son, but then a girl came along, and her name was Ila. So the king wasn't happy about that. He wanted a son and not a daughter. So he said to Vasishtha, what's going on here? He said, you're all qualified. You're all pure brahmanas. You know how to do all these things perfectly. So what happened? So Vasishtha, with his great intelligence and insight, he figured out what happened. He said, oh, the priest who was offering oblations, he deviated from the protocol. And there's one verse there that says, he said Vashaha. So I don't know the significance of that, but that's mentioned in one of the verses. So somehow, because of the way he pronounced the mantras, apparently, he arranged that she would get a daughter. So then Vasishtha, he could see that the king was really morose about what had happened. So he said, well, I'll do something about that. So he prayed to Lord Vishnu, actually. And he asked Lord Vishnu for the power to rectify the situation. So what happened was, he said, okay, he actually turned the girl, Ila, into a man. And his name was Sudyumna. So his first child was, so this is a first trans story in the Bhagavad. Bhagavatam has everything, so we even have a trans story there. So this girl, Ila, she became Sudyumna. And he was a very handsome man, very qualified, naturally, as so many of these Kshatriyas are. So one day, this Sudyumna, the son of Vivaswan, or Vivaswata Manu, he was going on an excursion into the forest, hunting excursion, actually. And interesting there, this struck me. It says he was wearing armor, and he had weapons, like bows and arrows. I was saying, what do you need to wear armor when you're going hunting? In case somebody else shoots you by mistake. I don't know. Anyway, it says that he was wearing armor. So it says they traveled towards the north, and eventually they entered into a forest called Sukumar. And in that forest, all of a sudden, something extraordinary happened. This Sukumar and his associates, soldiers and his entourage, all the men, and the horse he was riding on, he had a horse from the Sindh province. Everyone who's opulent in the Bhagavatam is always riding a horse from the Sindh province. Even Krishna has a Sindhi horse. It's mentioned in the 10th canto. So it's a special breed of horses. So anyway, all these men, they all turned into women. And they looked at each other, and they were really, it says they were morose and bewildered, and they didn't know what to do. So so then they continued going into the forest. And the question arose, well, what happened? Actually, what happens is Pariksit Maharaj asks, well, why did this happen? What was the nature of this place? What was the power of this place that these men became turned into women? So he told the story that previously some sages, the sages are described as extremely advanced and effulgent, that they lit up the whole place just with their own opulences. But they were walking into this forest, and it happened to be this forest of Sukumar is where Lord Shiva and Parvati reside, at least sometimes. And Shiva and Parvati, because they're business is to procreate. Actually, they do. They have, of course, a huge, major role to play in the population of the universe. So they were engaged in sexual affairs. So the Parvati was naked, and she saw these sages coming, and she became very disturbed by it. And she quickly covered up, and she complained to Lord Shiva, can you do something about this? So he said, okay, from now on, any man who comes into this forest will instantly turn into a woman. So that was the genesis of this story. That's why the Sudyumna and his associates turned into women. So then, back to the Sudyumna story. So they were now women. Now, one thing is, it doesn't say, you would naturally think, well, maybe he turned back into Ila, although, the girl who he was formerly before Vasishtha arranged for him to become a man. But it's never stated explicitly, at least in the Bhagavatam, that I could figure out. So anyway, now So Jivna is a she, whatever her name is. And this, the son of the moon god, whose name is Buddha, with a 1D for some reason, but he got the name because he's very intelligent. So he was very attracted to her, and he consorted with her and produced a child. So while he was a, you know, he was a she, he had a child. And that child was, I'm forgetting his name, Urvashi and Puruva. Puruva. This is, actually, I'm trying to work into the story of Puruva. It's a major story in the Bhagavatam. So Puruva was the son who was created. So the first son, besides these 10 sons of Manu, the first son was actually this Puruva. And when whatever the girl's name was, Ila, I guess, he could see that this Vasishtha could see that she wasn't satisfied. So Vasishtha again, he said, well, let me do something about this. Now this Sujumna has become a female. So this time he prayed to Lord Shiva. Actually, he or she was in this situation because of the Lord Shiva's power. So he prayed to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva said, okay, now Sujumna will be a male every alternate month. So 1 month male, 1 month female. And then it says, although the citizens were not very happy about this. So he was a king for a month and then a queen for a month, apparently, or maybe not, I don't know. Didn't say that specifically. But in any case, he did rule in that way. Maybe just, you know, didn't rule for every other, only ruled every other month. In any case, so that was the arrangement that was made. So now he has this son. Actually, it says that he... Or Manu Maharaj, actually, he performed great penance. Well, actually, Sujumna, talks about how he lived out his life that way, and at the end he performed austerities, and I think it says maybe he went to the spiritual world, something tends to happen. And then, after him, the way it's described in the Bhagavatam, then Vaivaswata Manu still wanted sons. So he performed austerities for 100 years, and then he begot 10 sons in his wife, Shraddha. So then actually what happens in the Bhagavatam, we hear about all these 10 sons, one after the other, and who his son was, and so on, these different lineages. So then getting back to the story of this Puruva. Now Puruva has another name. His name is also Ila. In the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear about Ila. And there, he's in the renounced mode. Actually, Krishna tells his story when he's speaking to Uddhava. And he says, it's called the Ila Gita, actually, in the 11th canto. And we hear then he's in the mood of renunciation. He's lamenting how his life was just all Maya and so on, how it was Karmakanda and so on. He becomes renounced. But anyway, so this King Puruva, so he is also very opulent, very qualified. He was the son of the moon god. So he was very beautiful. So then this Urvashi, so now we get to Urvashi. Now Urvashi was an apsara. And her origin is when Naranarayana Rishi was made their appearance, they were engaged in austerities. And their austerities were very, very great. So Lord Indra, he gets nervous when sages perform great austerities because he thinks as a result of their austerities, they're going to take my place. So he sent beautiful apsaras to entice Narayan Rishi to fall down, basically. And so what happened, of course, the story is that Narayan Rishi didn't concern him at all. So one of the aspects or personalities that Indra sent was spring personified to create a beautiful atmosphere, gentle breezes and so on, which are supposed to excite sex desire. But Naranarayana Rishi was not disturbed at all. In fact, he produced from himself Narayana Rishi. It's hard to talk about them because they're two, but they're one. So say Narayana Rishi, from himself, he created beautiful damsels, apsaras, himself, that defeated the beauty of all the others that were there. So Indra, he apologized, actually. He saw this, the power of this personality. So Narayana Rishi said, these beautiful apsaras that I created, you can select one of them as your own. So he selected Urvashi. One of them that was created by Narayana Rishi was Urvashi. So she became an associate, let's say, of King Indra. So she comes in several places in the Bhagavatam. One of the things was that she one time attracted Mitra and Varuna, and they passed semen, and then Vasishtha was born. Actually, it was the second birth of Vasishtha, because he also had been cursed by, I forget the story of that one. I think he cursed a disciple, then the disciple cursed him. So anyway, he had to die and take rebirth. So that was because Mitra and Varuna, when they saw Urvashi, they passed semen, and then Vasishtha was born. So these Mitra and Varuna, they were upset with that Urvashi had done this, made them do this, made them fall down. So they cursed her to be attracted to a human being and have to leave the heavenly planets. So that's what happened. This Pururava was a very attractive man, and she was attracted to him because of this curse, and she went and enticed him, and they got together in a union. It's interesting the way it's stated in the Bhagavatam. Sometimes these things are very, the way they speak to each other is very upfront, we say. So there's no, they said, let us live together in a sexual union. So they just come right out and talk about it. We're coming together because we want to have sex. That's what it's about. So now the thing with Urvashi was that she knew that this is happening, this attraction that she had, this whole affair was happening because of this curse. So she wanted to get it over with quickly. So this is the way Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments on it. He says, so she made this prenup. She made the prenuptial agreement. Said, okay, I'll consort with you, but on two conditions. One is that I can only eat food cooked in ghee, and I can never see you naked except at the time of sexual intercourse. So these were the fine print in the contract. So what happened was, and she also had two lambs she was very attached to these two lambs she had brought with her from the heavenly kingdom. She was very concerned that the lambs always be protected by the king. He's supposed to be this powerful Kshatriya king. So she was told him, you have to take care of my lambs also. So one night at midnight in the dark, dead darkness of the night, Gandharvas came and they stole these two lambs. And because Pururava and Urvashi, mostly they were having sex at night, so they were both naked. And when Urvashi discovered that the lambs had been stolen, she got really upset with her husband and started calling him names like a eunuch and, you know, you have no power and who are you, what kind of man are you, and so on. So he was indignant. He just, I'll show you. So he jumped up and naked and ran after the Gandharvas. And when they caught up with the Gandharvas, they said, oh, you can have the lambs. But the Gandharvas were so effulgent that they lit up the whole place. So Urvashi saw him. He was naked because of the light that they had created. So immediately she disappeared. So Pururva was so attached to Urvashi. He was mad. It describes in the Bhagavatam, he was mad. He was just walking, wandering around from forest to forest because he was so attached to Urvashi. Well, the sexual pleasure he was having with Urvashi. And so he was thinking actually of committing suicide. So actually he ran into her. He ran into her somehow. And she was with other five companions, it says. Apparently they were also Gandharvas. And so he was begging her, please come back, please come back. And then she was preaching to him, basically, don't be so attached. Don't stop acting like a, you know, weak person. Don't you know how women are just, you know, so deceitful and they act like foxes and they will, you know, just steal your mind and, you know, be a man and renounce, you know, be, stop acting like this. But he kept saying, no, but can't we just talk for some time? And anyway, at some point she said, okay, we'll be together one at the end of the year for one night. So that happened. Oh, and then she said, and then we will have children. We'll have more children. So she heard the word more, and he said, oh, she's pregnant. I didn't know she was pregnant. So he found out then that he was going to have a son. So anyway, a year later, they came together, and they spent one night together. And but he was so attached to her, he didn't want her to leave. He was begging her to stay and so on. So she said, okay. She said, pray to the Gandharvas, and they'll help you out. They'll help you unite with me. So what happened was he prayed like that to the Gandharvas, and they somehow or other they sent him a girl. Now it's kind of strange because in the Bhagavatam, I saw two translations. The way Prabhupada talks about it, he said they gave her an Agni Stali girl. So this is the word Agni Stali. So it sounds like I was always thinking it sounded like some kind of robot or something. I don't know what it is. But anyway, but in Bhanu Swami's translation, he just calls it a sacrificial vessel of some sort. And he says that Puruva was so mad that he was thinking this was Urvashi. Anyway, Prabhupada said that she was some kind of Agni Stali girl. It looked exactly like Urvashi. And so somehow or other, but he, as he started to associate with her, first he was very happy, and he was wandering in the forest with her and happy-go-lucky and everything's fine. But then he realized, this is not Urvashi, something's wrong here. And he became very upset, and he just left her, or the vessel, whatever it was, in the forest, and he went home and he started meditating. And so this is actually a significant historical and cosmic historical event that took place here. Just the night that he was meditating, Treta Yuga came in, and he was instrumental in bringing in Treta Yuga. Treta Yuga, of course, in Satya Yuga, everyone is meditating, basically. Everyone's a Paramahansa. But in Treta Yuga, people start becoming interested in enjoying this material world, so Karmakanda sacrifices come in. So Treta Yuga is the age of sacrifice. So he started meditating, and then he returned to where he had left this Agni Stali girl. And he saw, this is the way the story goes, he saw a shala tree growing from an ashwata tree or some other kind of tree. And it made him think somehow of using the shali, one of the trees, to make ardhani wood, to create fire to perform sacrifice. Before this had not been done. This is the origin of that. So he was thinking of himself as the upper, somehow three pieces of wood are used. I think you rub two together and the third one starts a fire or something like that. So he was thinking of himself as the top piece of wood and his Urvashi as the bottom piece of wood and their son is the wood in between. So anyway, he was able to perform some Vedic sacrifice and Karmakanda sacrifice. And by that sacrifice, he was able to go to Gandharva Loka and be with Urvashi again. So that's how the story ends in that part of the Bhagavatam. And then you hear again later in the 11th canto, as I was saying, in the Aila Gita, that he's renouncing everything. So, and he goes back to Godhead. So it sounds like he did that while he was in Gandharva Loka. It's not stated directly, but seems to imply that he did these things, and either that or he just left at some point, but at some point he went back to Godhead. Because when we hear about it at the end in the ninth canto, he's just attached to Urvashi and he's happy he's going to Gandharva Loka to associate with her. So this is one story. There are many stories like this in the Bhagavatam, especially in the ninth canto. I was thinking of, I won't go on and tell more stories, but we have, for example, Chavana Rishi and this girl, Sukanya. He was an old man. This is another marriage that took place. And actually, this Chavana Rishi, he was so old and disheveled. You could see the veins in his body and so on, but he was transformed into a beautiful man by the Ashwini Kumars because he promised to allow them to have Soma, Just a couple of little things I'll mention. Apparently the Soma, if the Ashwini Kumars were not entitled to partake of the Soma beverage at Vedic sacrifices and during the Soma sacrifice. So this Soma, I don't know exactly what it is, because it's a few times in the Bhagavatam, or at least twice that I can think of, it says that Indra would become intoxicated by taking Soma. But I don't think it's Soma, like it's not like drinking whiskey or something. It's said to be an intoxication, but it's also, it's invigorating, it allows you to live a long time. And so, but for some reason, the Ashwini Kumaras weren't allowed to do it, but this Chavana Rishi, with his power, he was able to allow them to do that they could take the Soma. And so they turned him into a very beautiful man. Another interesting part of that story is, of course, this girl, Sukanya, she had to marry Chavana Rishi, who's this old cantankerous guy that she had to. But she was very submissive, and she served him very nicely and so on. So that when he got the benediction, when he got transferred, the three of them, the two Ashwini Kumars and the old man, they went into this pond, and then they came out as three very beautiful persons. And Sukanya didn't know which one was her husband. So instead of saying, this is the way it's presented in the Bhagavatam, you would think she would just say, well, which one of you is my husband? It says she took shelter of the Kumars and asked them. But you think, well, she didn't know which one was the Kumars. She could have just said, which one is my husband? But for some reason, she said, more or less, it sounds like she said, whichever of you are the Kumars, or the Ashwini Kumars, tell me which one is my husband. So that's what happened. And of course, her father shows up and sees this young, beautiful man with her, and he says, "What's going on here, you unfaithful girl?" And she's smiling, because she's actually very chaste. And then, so I don't know what happened, how long Chavana Rishi, I guess they lived happily ever after. She ended up with this young man. Of course, then there's the story of, again, I'm just going through this really quickly, but because there's some interesting details in this story of Sobarimuni. Sobarimuni, of course, he was meditating in the Yamuna River. And of course, he saw some fish copulating, and he got the idea that he wanted to get married. So he goes to this king. The king was King Mandata, right? Yeah, Mandata, I think. So this king had 50 daughters. Actually, this king, his birth is interesting because his father, Yovanashva, the sages, there's a similar thing where he wanted a son, but he himself got up. They had the sages, the priests doing the yajna, they created this drink that the mother, the wife was supposed to drink this, and then she would become pregnant. But he got up during the night, and he was really thirsty, and he drank it. So then a child was born from his side, and that child was Mandata. And of course, because he was a man that gave birth, he wasn't able to nurse the child. So then, was it Indra? Indra or the moon god? I forget which one. One of them said, "Drink." I think it was Indra. He said, "Drink from my finger." And then, yes, Indra. And so Mandata was nursed, you can say, by King Indra. This was Mandata. So then he had 50 daughters. And when but Sobarimuni went to him and asked, he said, "I want to marry one of your daughters." And the king said, he didn't want, because he was just an old, he'd been living underwater, had barnacles growing on him probably. He was like, he was really not attractive at all. So the king said, "My daughters can marry whoever they want." So the sage thought, well, he's just, being disrespectful to me. He said, "So I'll show him." So with his power, he turned himself into a very beautiful young man. So then he went back, and it says someone brought him into the woman's quarters for some reason, which usually doesn't happen. So when the girls saw him, they said, "Whoa, I want to marry him." And they started arguing with each other. "No, I want him. No, I want him." And so it ended up he married all 50 of them. And he had 100 sons, was it? From each one, he had 5,000 sons. So then, I mentioned this, I think it may be my last class. Eventually, he got tired of it, and he went to the forest, and all his wives went with him, and they took vanapras, and that was the end of that story. You have so many stories like this in the Bhagavatam. And, of course, we get commentaries here and there, but a lot of times, even the commentaries, a lot of times, they just more or less explain what's being said. without any, you might say, philosophical lesson being drawn from it. So we know that the Bhagavatam, it works in some kind of mystical way, I like to think, because when you read it on the surface level, a lot of times you think, well, how is this, especially in the ninth canto, we're supposed to be, you think you're progressing spiritually step by step up to the tenth canto, then in the ninth canto you get all these bizarre stories. But somehow or other, it's working on our consciousness in some mysterious way. I can't really penetrate into it, how it works. But I mean, I've heard devotees explain it's sort of like this ninth canto, it has these stories because it's getting rid of all the residue, any little attraction you might have. So you hear these stories about how people are suffering. Well, of course, one thing, a lot of these stories between couples ends up to being a lot of suffering. Just like King Yayati, that's another whole story with his two wives, Sharmishtha and Devayani. So he wanted to enjoy, you know, he became an old man prematurely, so he traded his old age with one of his sons so he could be youthful. So he enjoyed with Devayani for a long, long time. Then eventually he said, what am I doing? I'm just in Maya. I got to get, you know, make spiritual advancement here. So that, of course, that tends to be the way these stories end up. You get to see how people enjoy so incredibly. Actually, this story that we're going to be reading now about Kardamuni and Devahuti, they enjoy for hundreds or thousands of years, traveling all over the universe and having sex for about 100 years in a bed that increases sexual desire, a level of enjoyment that's practically inconceivable. But then what happens ultimately, they give it up. Kardamuni's son, Kapila Dev, appears, and then he leaves home, and then she gets transcendental knowledge from him, and then she goes back to Godhead. So I guess you could say that's one of the lessons. You hear these stories, but they tend to end with a spiritual note. The lesson is given to us like that. All right, that's enough of that. Prabhupada tended not to tell stories like this, but I'm thinking, well, they're in the Bhagavatam, so I guess it's bona fide to tell the story because it's just coming straight from the Bhagavatam. It's Bhagavatam Krita. So I'll read this, today's verse again. Ya ujjatam anadritya kinasham abhiyachate kshiyate yadvash tad yasha spitam manas chavagyaya hataha. One who rejects an offering that comes of its own accord, but later begs a boon from a miser, thus loses his widespread reputation, and his pride is humbled by the neglectful behavior of others. So you can see Swayambhuva Manu, he's just appealing to his sense of honor. Well, it's kind of a mundane thing, you could say. Of course, we know that he's a sage, but especially kings, often they're, you know, encouraged to do amazing things because of their honor. It's an honorable thing to do. That lesson, of course, comes out in the Bhagavatam a lot with Kshatriyas, because there's a lot of talk about Kshatriyas, so it comes out often. Trivikram Prabhu.
So, one of the topics of the Bhagavatam is that it discusses the kings of the solar and the Soma dynasty.
Yeah.
So sometimes they call, especially in the ninth canto, and then you get a lot of stories there. Very interesting. But they're all interconnected, really, because, you know, they're related and they're progressing with different things throughout them. So even though they may seem mundane, but they got some deeper connection.
Actually, that's how the story of Sharyati, that King Sharyati, he was one of the sons or grandsons of Manu. And what happens is Shukadeva Goswami, he's just heard about, in early chapters of the ninth canto, he's heard about the Surya dynasty. And then the 14th chapter begins, and then Pariksit Maharaj says, can you tell me now about the moon dynasty? And that begins with Sharyati, and that's how you hear the story of Chavana Rishi and so on. Actually, you also hear, by the way, I mentioned how Buddha, this Buddha with the 1D, he was the son of the moon god. Well, he was the son of the moon god because the moon god raped, well, We don't know if we raped. Actually, I shouldn't say that. Kidnapped Brihaspati's wife. And when he finally got her back, she was pregnant. So it's questionable whether it was consensual or not. It doesn't say it exactly. It kind of sounds like maybe it was, because she was embarrassed to say whose son it was. There's a whole war that took place between the demons, the Suras and the Asuras, over this child. His name was Buddha. So he was the son of the father of Puruva. He was the son of the moon god. By the way, the moon god was created by the perspiration of Atri Rishi. In one place, I don't know if it's in a purport or in the verse, probably says he impregnated the womb of his wife with his perspiration, and that's how the moon god was created, was born. Go ahead.
So when Sukanya was trying to tell who is Shaivana amongst the three, the Kumar, the Ashwini twins and Shaivana, when all of them looked young, the twins told her that they don't touch the ground. They were a little above the ground, and only Shaivana would be touching the ground.
Uh-huh.
That's how you be able to select.
But she should have known then which one was her husband.
They're like, and they're not complete demigods. They're physicians of the demigods. So that's why they couldn't drink the soma rasa.
Actually, these Kumars, I've seen two different ladies mentioned as the mother. One of them is Vadava, which is one of the wives of the fire god, right? Yeah, of Agni. One of the wives of Agni is Vadava. Vadava is the water that is the fire that's within the ocean. So in one place it says that the Ashwini Kumars were the sons of her. And then another place I read that someone else was their mother. So I don't know, maybe a different, you know, in different Manvantars comes out differently.
One other point. So when Sudyumna was king, he was hunting, it stated he ran into Elavrita Varsha. You know, and that was, you know, when I say Bharat Varsha, and then there's Elavrita Varsha. And that is where Lord Shiva,
right,
Parvati, usually he
ended up. Right, Lord Shiva is in Elavrita Varsha.
Yeah.
Varsha. Actually, it says that it was at the base of Mount Sumeru, actually,
yeah,
where this forest is, this forest of Sukumar. So that's in Elavrita Varsha. Okay.
Did you say that Prabhupada said that not to tell these stories? And I wonder, what was the context?
No, I said that Prabhupada generally didn't tell stories very much.
Oh, he didn't tell the stories.
There's one class I remember I listened to years ago. It's on the first canto, I think, and Prabhupada does tell something about some story related to the Pandavas or something. Then he says, but we're not so interested in these stories. And then he goes back to talking philosophy. So Prabhupada didn't tell a lot of stories like that. But he knew them, of course. As a child growing up in India, of course, he knew Mahabharata and Ramayana, but he tended not to speak to them so much. He mostly was giving us the message of be Krishna conscious.
Trying to understand this story with Karyama and Devahuti. So we know the marriage between Kshatriya and Brahmanas, it's not good. Anuloma Pratiloma, right? And so I'm thinking, why is Swayabhumavanu, because he's a Kshatriya, give to the Brahmana, his daughter?
That's a good question.
And the Kapila Muni, which Varna he would belong to?
Kapila, what his Varna was? Because he was from a mixed caste. No, see, Kardama Muni was a Brahmin, and his wife was from a Kshatriya family. So he was, it's funny because Ridhan Anamaraj gave you that his whole class was about mixing Varnas, right? And I was thinking, he never brought up the point that this particular, the context is, we're talking about a mixed caste here. But of course, there's Anuloma and Pratiloma. So a Kshatriya man, I don't know if that's Anuloma or Pratiloma, I forget. If a Kshatriya man and a Brahmin, let's see, a Brahmin man can marry a Kshatriya girl, I think. I think that's Anuloma, if I remember it correctly. So that's considered to be okay. But what caste, usually these persons, they become suttas. That's one way that this sutta caste is created, like Ramaharshan Sutta and Ugrashvara Sutta or Sutta Goswami. And what they do, they're the ones who chant at these auspicious occasions and sacrifices and coronations and things like that, the Sukadas, the Magadas, and the Vandis. So the suttas, one of the things they do, guided by the Brahmanas, or under the control of the Brahmanas, they tell Vedic stories or chant mantras or whatever they do exactly. So it's considered a not so good. Of course, Lord Balaram, he saw when he remembered that Ramaharshan was a sutta, he said, well, maybe that's why he's not acting properly. So it's kind of one of those mixed, as you say, it's a mixed caste, so that maybe the standing in society is somewhat mixed too. But I don't know, I've never heard Kapila Dev. We would think that, well, he's a Brahmana, obviously. He's acting as a Brahmana, certainly. He's teaching his mother Sankhya philosophy, and obviously he's an incarnation of Godhead, so he's transcendental to all of it. But like Krishna and Balaram, are they Vaishyas? Sometimes it comes up in the stories of Krishna and Balaram, or especially Krishna, of course, whether he's a Vaishya or a Kshatriya. So, and of course, it's irrelevant, really, because it's an incarnation of God. So I've never seen anywhere any mention of Kapila Dev belonging to this particular caste, one caste or another, I don't know.
Hare Krishna. So what essence or the main message of the verse, like whatever comes by its own accord, you should accept it. Mm. If you reject it and later beg for it, then your pride is crushed or like your...
Yeah, what is this? This
Mahaprabhu says, like, devotee has Amani quality, no pride. What kind of pride they're talking about?
Oh, pride you're talking about? Yeah, of course.
You get crushed if you reject it first and later accept it or beg for it.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, Manu, he's a Kshatriya, so he's more concerned about pride. So he's telling the sage, you may be embarrassed later. So that's not a good thing. So especially Kshatriya is concerned about yasha, about fame. So that may be one reason why Manu is trying to give different arguments. So this is one argument he's giving from his perspective. Maybe more than from the sage's perspective, this would be a bad thing. But it's one of those, niti, like Chanakya niti, accept what comes of its own accord. Otherwise, you may have to beg for it later. So that's not a good thing. Socially, you can say. So we have lessons on different levels. So like Prabhupada would say, like Chanakya, he called him a mundane moralist. But still he would quote him on certain things. So this lesson seems to be more in that category of niti, mundane consideration. If you don't want to be embarrassed, then here I'm offering this girl and you don't want to have to go beg somewhere else later. So he's just making this argument to him. Not really a transcendental. Of course, there is a transcendental side of it too. A devotee is supposed to live in such a way that everything is being sent by Krishna. Of course, we also react in certain ways. In Vedic times, a Kshatriya, just like actually going back to Urvashi, Arjuna went to the heavenly planets, and when he was there, Urvashi enticed him. She wanted to unite with him, but he said, "No, no, I can't because you're my mother." Because he knew that she was the consort of Puruva, and he knew that Puruva was his forefather, ancestor. So she was like a mother to him. And he says, so therefore I can't associate with you. So, Arjuna is a Kshatriya. Generally a Kshatriya, we know at other times Arjuna did accept a woman who approached him and had a child. What's her name? Ulupi, is it? The Naga girl. So Kshatriyas would, in fact, they were in some sense duty-bound. King Yayati also, the same thing. This Devayani is approaching me, so I'm a king and it's my duty to accept her. But as devotees, we don't necessarily do that. We're living different lives. if some woman comes to a devotee and says, you know, it's your duty to accept me. No, we don't. We're living. Our lives are guided by different rules than these ordinary considerations in the Varnashra institution. So you have niti rules on a certain level, you know, kinds of things that are spelled out, for example, in Manu Samhita. So we're not so concerned with those things. Our rules come from Vaishnavas, our Sampradaya. We follow the rules given by the Goswamis and so on. So these considerations are not necessarily so important. All right, 9 o'clock, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.